Support for this program is provided by Chevron, the human energy company.
This is Politico Energy. I'm Catherine Morehouse. The world needs trillions of dollars to fight climate change, but the main global lender is having some trouble. Let me explain. The World Bank starts its spring meetings today in D.C., and that bank is expected to play a huge role in helping world governments fight climate change by giving them financing. But how much money the bank can loan out will dictate how quickly governments can slash emissions. And the problem is the institution is caught in the middle of several geopolitical battles, as well as key funding questions. So today, I spoke with Zach Coleman to learn more about the World Bank's spring meetings, as well as the obstacles and climate stakes. It's Wednesday, April 17th.
The World Bank spring meetings begin today. They'll run through Friday, and it brings a bunch of finance ministers and people from around the world to Washington, D.C. to discuss the many ways in which this bank is trying to evolve itself to address global challenges. That is one of its big charges under new President Ajay Banga, but also it's being put on the bank by G7 leaders and even G20 leaders to just kind of adapt the bank to a world that it didn't envision when it was created 80 years ago. I mean, we have so many global challenges like enormous debt crises in the developing world that have been exacerbated by the pandemic, which increased debt, and then also by climate change, which is another thing that was not envisioned 80 years ago, and at least not to the extent that we know it today. And it's exacerbating all these challenges in adding to debt in the developing world. So there's this thought that the bank needs to do a better job of addressing those shared challenges that affect every country.
So based on your reporting, it sounds like there are maybe some shortcomings in the current negotiations. And so walking into this meeting, what is kind of the current central tensions, and can you lay out where negotiations are currently falling short?
Well, keep in mind that the World Bank was set up to stabilize the international financial system. I mean, it is geared towards middle-income countries and low-income countries. So these are countries that often have to rely on the bank for just below market rate loans. The bank uses its AAA credit rating agency to go out and get cheap loans and then lend it to other more indebted or more financially, monetarily insecure middle-income nations. Think of like an Argentina that would have to face higher interest rates if they were just to go to the broader market. So it's a way to provide cheaper finance to larger countries that have a lot of the world's poor. And then also it is a institution that gives a lot of cheap money grants, low interest loans to the poorest countries that wouldn't actually be able to get much of a competitive rate on the open market. And these countries are facing so much other financial stress right now. I mean, there's a lot of indebtedness, which just servicing the debt payments for a lot of the lowest income countries are you know, outstripping the costs that they pay on education. I mean, these are huge bills that have come due. So right now, the global financial system needs to lend more. It needs to have cheaper finance available, and there's just not a lot of money in the system. So the World Bank is trying to stretch its balance sheets. It's trying to get more headroom to lend more, to try to stretch capital to places because there are just so many needs. But in the end, it's just not enough money.
And so it sounds like those are kind of maybe some of the structural technical challenges to getting this money out the door. And I'm wondering how geopolitical conflicts are playing into this. We know it's a tumultuous time in the world. How is that complicating the World Bank's mission further?
Well, the World Bank is a largely G7 institution. The G7 nations, we're talking about France, the US, UK, these countries control 40% of the bank's shares, but they do not control 40% of the global economy. So, you know, there's a lot of efforts to keep China at bay. I mean, Japan and the US in particular don't want to infuse the bank with more money because it would likely involve adjusting China's voting shares upwards because they are underrepresented at the bank's board. And that geopolitical conflict keeps a lot of new money on the sidelines that might potentially come through if those conflicts did not exist. Then at the same time, a lot of the G7 nations are squirreling away money for defense purposes. We have a potentially spiraling conflict in the Middle East. We certainly have the ongoing war in Ukraine. So a lot of countries are putting more money towards defense. So that leaves less available to put into the system for other purposes, for other countries, when so many domestic governments are putting money away for defense. And at the same time, there's a bunch of national elections this year. So when you think about trying to make your voters happy, I mean, not a lot of votes get won by putting money towards international financial needs. So there's a lot of constraints politically as well right now. So that is, again, making this pie smaller at a time when the needs are growing.
All right. So if I'm Zach Coleman today, what am I walking into this meeting looking for?
If you're Zach Coleman today, I feel very sorry for you because there's a lot going on. I think one of the interesting things for me as a climate reporter is we're expecting this week to have an update on the methodology they use for assessing the impact of their climate investing. I mean, right now, a lot of the impact is judged by how much lending they do, but there's less known about the benefits from that lending. So what are the net greenhouse gas emission reductions from their lending? What are the climate co-benefits of adaptation finance or, you know, any sort of health finance that goes along to addressing climate-produced health effects? So I think that that will be interesting as a climate reporter. Again, there's going to be other discussions about future reforms the bank can pursue. There's a lot of discussions about different ways to count capital that is being pledged to the bank in case of an emergency, but is not actually held by the bank. That could then also create more headroom for lending. So those are some of the things that I'm looking out for.
Also, the U.S. grid could support another 100 gigawatts of power through relatively simple technology upgrades. That's according to a new report that was released by the Department of Energy on Tuesday. The study found that there are commercially available grid solutions that can more than meet the anticipated 91 gigawatt demand increase that we're expecting over the next decade. And doing so would be cheaper than building tons of new power lines or new power plants. For more news on energy and the environment, subscribe to our free newsletter at politico.com/power-switch. And subscribe to Politico Pro to read our morning energy newsletter. Some of the music in today's show is composed by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. And that's our show. I'm Catherine Morehouse, and we'll see you back tomorrow.
Support for this program is provided by Chevron. Chevron is taking action to keep methane in the pipe. Their 2028 upstream methane intensity target is set to be 53% below the 2016 baseline. And they're committed to evolving facility designs and operating practices. That's energy in progress. Learn more at chevron.com/methane.